Velkommen til korrespondentene, atter en gang. Jeg heter Roy Kvatningen og har som vanlig med meg Vegard Kvåle.
God dag, god dag.
Og Mathias Ask.
Hei, sånn.
Her sitter vi igjen da. Hva det vi har for noe oppløftende, positivt å si I dag om amerikansk politikk og samfunn?
Nei, vi liker jo å holde det lett og ledig, så vi har nå gått løs på klima og hvordan klima I ferd med å...
Suse fremover og virkelig... Nei.
Ja, ikke sant. Ja. Nei, hvor alvorlig klimasituasjonen for deler av USA, vel mer riktig å si. Vi har...
Og hvor lamslått enkelte deler av det amerikanske samfunnet til å håndtere det.
Så prøver du å si at det å ansette en person som har saksøkt det amerikanske miljødirektoratet som direktør for miljødirektoratet ikke nødvendigvis har slått så positivt ut, eller?
Ja, nei, altså det knyttet til en leder da også, en president som har kalt menneskeskapte klimaendringer for en hoax diktet opp av Kina. Jo en god kombinasjon selvfølgelig for et handlekraftig føderalt myndigheter. Så det som jo har skjedd da I USA jo at mens på føderalt nivå skjer det nesten ingenting.
De fjerner en del reguleringer da.
Fjerner en del reguleringer, ja. De har for eksempel trukket USA ut av den globale klimaavtalen
og
så videre.
Ja, og det blir mye enklere å forgifte vann nå.
Mye enklere.
Så når du sier at de ikke har gjort noe, så jo det feil, for de går jo tilbake.
Det helt riktig, det helt riktig. Trekker det tilbake, ja. Så det som jo da skjer at på lokalt plan rundt omkring I USA, så jo fortsatt veldig mange bekymret for det som I ferd med å skje. Det ser man særlig I enkelte delstater, sånn som California, Florida. Og vi har jo nå da intervjuet en dame som heter Maggie Fernandez, som holder til I Miami. Hun en lokal klimaaktivist, og hun har og en recovering bureaucrat, som hun kaller seg selv, som jo kjemper for lokale klimatiltak. Og I Miami så har man jo gjort en del ting allerede, for det jo en av de byene, større byene I USA som kanskje aller mest utsatt når havet stiger.
Litt som Nederland...
Ja, det ligger jo omtrent, altså det jo ikke noe høyder I Miami, så de jobber med å heve en del veier, de jobber med å forandre, bygge slags diker rundt byen og så videre. Og det jo snakk om få år før Miami virkelig kan ligge under vann, altså, hvis utviklingen fortsetter I samme retning som nå.
Ja, ja det var en interessant prat med Fernandez, jeg må si det. Skal vi bare sette over til intervjuet? Her Maggie Fernandez fra Miami.
I've been pigeonholed into being a climate activist, but really I'm a recovering bureaucrat, formerly working in government, understanding the issues, the quality of life issues that affect our entire community. And then there's two things I'm most passionate about here. It's Miami, the community that I was born and raised in, and also local government, because I really believe that local government is what's most important and reaches our communities the most. It touches our lives 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So climate is really about quality of life. It's something that's going to affect us, is affecting us already here in Miami. And it's affecting our quality of life, in particular for the most vulnerable in our community who are being left behind in Miami in many different ways.
Can you talk a little bit about what the city has done? Because Miami is one of those cities that have actually taken some steps to prepare for climate change. How can you talk a little bit about what is happening in that regard here in Miami?
Sure. First, you have to understand the complex government structure here in Miami. We have one large county, which is Miami-Dade County, that has a mayor. And then we have 34 cities. The largest of the cities is the city of Miami, which has its own mayor. And actually, the other 33 cities also have a mayor. So we have about 35 mayors in Miami-Dade County, and that could be that is very confusing to residents and also to those who come and visit us. So really the three jurisdictions that are doing the most climate planning are Miami-Dade County, which is the county, and then the city of Miami, and then the city of Miami Beach. The city of Miami Beach is way ahead of the city of Miami and Miami-Dade County. They had very strong political leadership for the last 8 years, by the way of Mayor Philip Levine, who is now actually running for state governor. And he really set the city on the course of not only just planning, but actually implementing very expensive projects to adapt.
Measures have they taken?
Yeah, they've raised roads. They've installed pumps to pump water out back into the bay and into the oceans. And these are actually short-term solutions, believe it or not. Very expensive short-term solutions. They're not the long-term solutions that we need in order to make sure that we stick around for a long while. Ultimately, though, all of these solutions are going to be short-term because we're just eventually going to have to move. Not me. This will be after me. Way after me.
But how concerned are people in Miami about this issue? Do people care about this in their everyday life?
Some people do, like me. I say I have PTSD, pre-trauma stress disorder. Some people do, and we're very loud, but most people don't. I think because it's so large and it's so expensive and it's so hard to really wrap your mind around it that most people just choose to ignore it, or it's just not part of like their everyday life. It will be once we start flooding every day, which is going to be within the next 10 to 15 years. We're going to have everyday flooding occurrences here. And so they'll start to pay attention, and then they'll wish they would have paid attention much sooner. And then they'll wish they would have elected leaders into office who actually that moved beyond the planning and moved into implementing solutions.
So how do you change people's minds? How do you get them to care at this point, not 10, 15 years in the future?
I don't know how to get people to care. I mean, what we're doing through the work of the Miami Climate Alliance, through the work of the Miami Climate Alliance partners like the New Florida Majority and Catalyst Miami, which work in underserved communities and vulnerable populations, which we all know that the underserved communities are going to be doubly and are being doubly impacted by the effects of climate. That's really where a lot of our focus is, but building power there, because local government for years and government in general has systemically just ignored those populations and the services that it provides. So by really activating those neighborhoods, teaching them, we do a lot of educating them on climate and what climate means to them and how it affects their lives. By activating those groups, also by, you know, working with the media and getting them to write stories on how homeowners are going to be affected through their property insurance and those costs and their property values, I think that speaks to a lot of the people down here in South Florida when you talk about money and how it's going to affect their wallet.
One thing that strikes me about a lot of American elections is that while voters will tell you that they think climate change is important, it's not usually their top issue. And you don't see a lot of candidates. Well, you'll see candidates who will campaign on climate change, but it won't be their number one issue. And you'll easily see climate change deniers get elected all the time. So why isn't climate change more of a, I guess, get out the vote kind of issue, especially for Democrats?
Well, local government down here is mostly run by conservatives, by Republicans. And the reason they don't talk about climate is because climate's expensive, and it means they're going to have to raise taxes. And down here, we have voters who do not want their taxes increased. We're seeing that change now, actually. In the city of Miami, residents feel so strongly that we have to address our stormwater issues and our flood prevention issues that we actually just voted to tax ourselves for a bond, through a bond referendum, in order to fund stormwater infrastructure upgrades and flood prevention projects to the tune of $200 million, which, by the way, is a drop in the bucket. Like, that's just a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of the type of the money that we need to address climate change. So what we're starting to see, and what we saw in the city of Miami Beach too, they voted to increase their stormwater fees, is voters are choosing to tax themselves instead of elected officials having the political courage to increase taxes in order to pay for these expensive projects.
So what you're saying is basically that the politicians have failed the people here, so the people will have to act as politicians together.
Yes, absolutely. But I don't know why that doesn't translate into electing new people into office. And it's probably because it's just so complex. And then we have horrendous voter turnout here in our elections. Our local elections turn out 10 to 12% of our registered voters, which is frankly pathetic. And then you have the conservatives. They have a machine behind getting people to the polls. So it's very difficult. But I believe that the political climate right now is ripe for change with the Me Too movement, with a Time's Up, with everything that's going on in Washington, where we have a president that, you know, lies 8 times a day to the American people. People are starting to demand change, and it's trickling down in a big way to local government. So we're hoping to start seeing change soon in the types of elected officials we put into office. And we hope that we will elect those that are going to address these very important issues.
You mentioned President Trump there. Obviously, he withdrew from the Paris Climate Accord, and that caused a lot of American cities and states to kind of take actions on their own because the federal government isn't doing anything. Is that happening here in Miami, in Florida?
Yes and no. We have the complex government structures that I was talking about. We have some city mayors who are and some city commissions who are passing their own types of resolutions. But yet we have then the county mayor who, I call it the trifecta. It's like we have President Trump, Governor Scott, and Miami-Dade Mayor Jimenez, who just pretend like climate is not happening. And if you look at the budgets, or if you look at anything that's put out by the county, it doesn't include the word, or the state, it doesn't include the words climate change. You look at the county budget, which is $6 billion, and there is no money in there for climate action. So it is in terms of their passing resolutions in support of the climate treaty. The Paris Climate Treaty, but they're not backing it up with substance. They're not actually doing anything. It's like, oh, we support the Paris Climate Treaty, but okay, that's it. And that's why it's important to have like the Miami Climate Alliance and all these organizations that are focused on climate justice issues, because we're reminding them nonstop that we need to act now. And we're really becoming a thorn in their side, which is kind of fun.
In a lot of places in the U.S., the resistance against Donald Trump seems to be like a motivating force to get voters out. Is that the case here too? Is that your impression, that the resentment against Donald Trump is so strong that it...
Yes, it's definitely woken up a sleeping giant, in particular for women and for voters who never were interested in the political process before. But it's not in Florida. It's not only Donald Trump. It's also Rick Scott, who is our governor, who just he's been horrible for the state for the last 8 years. And he's closed, for example, our the community development agency, which focused on a lot of the energy policy and climate policy. He has taken funding away from our regional planning councils and from our water management districts. There's a lot of hatred against him. He's won the last two elections by very, very slight margins. Slight, and only because he's self-funded his campaigns and is a gazillionaire and can pay for a lot of TV ads. So unfortunately, that wins elections, especially statewide elections. But yes, Trump, Rick Scott, and even some of our own local elected officials are really just have awoken this sleeping giant of women and others.
And you don't think Trump will send some money to Florida so that he can save his own Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach from the climate change?
No. I mean, he approved, he is allowing offshore drilling off the coast of Florida, and that affects his own property. So unless he's going to, like, you know, put a waiver around his own property. He doesn't care.
One thing we just briefly mentioned, but we didn't get into a lot of it, is all the hurricanes in Florida. And you've talked about the voter disengagement when it comes to climate change. And I'm wondering, how is it possible to be so disengaged from this issue when you have these huge hurricanes that batter the state with such frequency?
Yes. Well, we just had last summer, we had Hurricane Irma, and that really reminded people about the danger of these natural storms that are only being made worse by the climate change. But we're very resilient. Our memories are resilient in South Florida because we quickly and easily forget the trauma that we faced with previous hurricanes. And when we go through one hurricane season and don't experience any bad weather or any major storms, it's like we forget. And it's good because we're not super traumatized by it, but it's terrible because then we start the cycle again of unpreparedness. And that's what happened with Hurricane Irma last year. Well, there was many things that happened with Irma. It took like 5 days for that storm to even get to us. And it really affected not only vulnerable populations, but even a lot of middle-class working families and upper-middle-class working families like my sister, where you're told to prepare for 3 days, but then it took 5 days to come, you ran out of food. So imagine those vulnerable populations that they receive money from the state at the beginning of the month to purchase their food supply. This storm was at the beginning of the month. They went through all their food waiting for the storm, or it spoiled because some of them didn't have power for 12 days after. So it was when those things happen, that's what reminds us, oh man, we really have to prepare and we really need to have a voice of those who don't have. I was actually in a meeting after Hurricane Irma, and I had a firefighter tell the room that we don't really have to worry about vulnerable populations because they're used to taking care of themselves. And I was like, oh no, this is so terrible when like government is saying this. But it's, I know, it was heartbreaking, actually. There's such a lack of equity in government services. It's so depressing. But storms like Irma are important because it just reminds us that we have to be prepared, that there's vulnerable populations that don't have the financial capacity to prepare themselves. If you're a renter, some of your landlords don't even let you put up shutters or plywood to protect yourself. If there's a tree after the storm that falls on your home during the storm, you can't afford to pay a landscaper or somebody to come by and take it away for like $200 or $300. So you have to wait. You have to wait forever until somebody can help you. And that tree will stay on top of your house, maybe rain coming into your house, for months.
When you're out there advocating this issue, how do people respond? Do you feel like you're opening people's eyes? Do you what importance do you feel like your work has?
Yes, I believe that through the work of the Miami Climate Alliance, which is 70 plus organizations, and it's a variety, it's a wide variety of different types of organizations, which is important for an alliance to be diverse. There's, of course, you have the environmentalists, then you have the social justice organizations, you have the social services organizations, unions, teachers, children are part of the alliance. It's such a wide variety. It's such a wide casting coalition and alliance that it really makes the elected officials pay attention because it scares them. In the county, they're used to the commission. Before 2015, the commission was used to seeing two types of groups coming before them and advocating for issues, besides residents on their own issues, unions, and also community-based organizations that received funding from the county. They're like on a list and they got grants from the county. But in 2005, when the Miami Climate Alliance started, and we started, by the way, because we were planning, a group of us were planning a People's Climate March here. So through that process, we had engaged communities, engaged organizations. We realized in 2015 that the county budget, $6 billion budget, 800 pages long, didn't even include the word climate change or sea level rise. This is 2015. It's not that long ago. So because we were planning for a march, we're like, well, this is perfect. The county budget hearings are 2 weeks before the march. Let's advocate around certain requests in the county budget to start funding climate action. So what scared the commission the most was the different types of groups that came together. And they were like, whoa, this is powerful. And we got to pay attention. So since then, they have been paying attention, but it's been a fight. Like every time we take two steps forward, like happened in the city of Miami recently, we were able to ensure that appointments to the bond, you know, the bond program I spoke about earlier, the Miami Climate Alliance, we advocated to make sure that the appointments to the Citizens Oversight Board was equitable and was inclusive and diverse, did not include lobbyists, did not include special interests, included residents only. So we won that fight, and now we're getting great people appointed to it who believe in what we believe. But then 2 weeks later, you have the city manager moving the Office of Resilience under the Public Works Department. So it's like, oh my goodness, we take two steps forward and three steps back because they view resilience as infrastructure and we view resilience as broader than that and as people.
So where do you see this going? If you look at like Miami 15, 20 years from now, what do you think both on the political level but also in regards to the climate? What do you think this city will be like?
I believe we're going to have infrastructure projects come into the pipeline soon, at least in the city of Miami, because we do have money for that. So we'll be seeing a lot of construction and infrastructure work. We're already being warned by insurance companies that our insurance, they're going to stop insuring homes in Miami. So I don't know what result that's going to have, but there may be people already leaving Miami. So that's going to happen. We're going to see more flooding in the street, so people will be more woke about the issue. We'll have new elected officials because at the county, they'll all be termed out by 2020. So I would like to see, like personally, what I would like to see is our plans moving into action. Because right now we're still planning and plans, and it's a delay tactic. I would like to see plans into action. I'd like to see our vulnerable populations more prepared. I'd like to see that they have the resources that they need to respond to the next big storm, which is going to happen. That's really important. And we'll probably see our vulnerable populations, our low-income communities, further gentrified, unfortunately. It's already happening. Liberty City, which is one of our poorer areas in Miami-Dade County, is at the highest elevation in the county. So we're already seeing developers come in and start building there because they're smart. But it's gentrifying our communities. And we're already seeing climate migration. People have to move because they're being forced. So, you know, I'm a positive person. So I know that we'll start implementing solutions, but the inevitable is what it is. And people are, you'll start to see people move for financial reasons or because they have no other choice.
And on the federal level, though, do you think we'll have moved on in 15, 20 years? Do we have President Ivanka Trump at that point?
Oh, God, no, please. No more Trumps. I'm hoping he'll be impeached. But then we get something worse with Mike Pence. So it's no, I think that we'll have a much better president come 2 years. And then that will really help get swamp like people, which, you know, Trump was all about drain the swamp. Well, he is the swamp. He is the swamp creature, and all his people are swamp creatures with him. So we'll get rid of them, and then we'll get some professionalism back in federal government, and we'll have hopefully new elected officials at the state and who will respond to this and provide us with resources here. And we'll also have new people down here. So I'm hopeful about the political climate. Very hopeful. Can't get any worse, you guys. It's like awful. But I just don't. I think we're already too late. And I just don't know how we're gonna. We can only delay the inevitable.
Ja, det var jo hyggelig å besøke henne, livlig, munter dame som smilte og lo til tross for at hun jobbet med ganske tungt material hvor de små seirene kanskje ikke kommer som perler på en snor. Hva tenker vi, Mathias?
Nei, hun var jo ikke veldig optimistisk med tanke på at man kommer til å klare disse klimautfordringene. Og samtidig så skjønner jeg jo det når de amerikanske federale myndighetene med Trump i spissen ikke tar disse problemene på alvor.
Det er jo ganske megetsigende at forsikringsselskap har begynt å nekte å gi forsikring til huseiere som vil forsikre seg mot ekstremvær.
Ja, og som jeg spurte henne om, så synes jeg det er ganske spesielt at Florida, som ofte blir utsatt for orkaner og ser jo mye av disse klimaforandringene på nært hold, at selv ikke de tar dette på alvor, det er jo vanskelig å skjønne.
Ja, det er nettopp det at man ser særlig, ja, ta fjoråret som et eksempel med alle de orkanene og det ekstremværet man så i ja, Florida og sånne steder da, og likevel så er endringene politisk veldig fraværende, altså på i hvert fall på et høyere nivå. På lokalplan så det vel, som vi hørte her, litt bedre.
Og selv om det på mange måter positivt at enkelte delstater fortsatt sier de vil holde seg til Parisavtalen, de vil gå fremover med sine miljøtiltak, og dette jo noe jeg hører når man snakker med for eksempel folk som medlem av FNs klimapanel, når de vil prøve å se på de positive sidene, så kommer man jo ikke unna at hvis ikke USA går i bresjen, så vil man jo ikke nå klimamålene. De er jo en av de største forurenserne i verden.
Og der må man nesten sette mer lit til amerikanske bedrifter også, selskaper, at de tar mer hensyn til klima. Husker vi intervjuet Erik Solheim her i New York, og han snakket om at han var ikke så bekymret fordi han regner med at bedriftene vil ta tak. Og der ligger jo mye arbeidsplasser i å satse på fornybar energi.
Da er det jo godt at USA har en fremoverlent president som vil satse på kull.
Ja. Når selv kullbedrifter begynner å bevege seg over mot å jobbe med fornybar energi for å overleve, så er det veldig rart at de har en president som fortsatt insisterer på at kull er fremtiden.
Men samtidig, altså vi kan si mye om Trump, men han er jo ikke alene i det republikanske partiet å snakke om at klimaendringer bare er en bløff. Og jeg vet ikke om det hadde blitt så mye mer klimatiltak hvis det hadde blitt en annen republikaner.
Nei, hadde nok ikke det. Men kanskje disse faktasidene om klimaendringer hadde fått lov til å bli værende på nettsiden deres? Ja. Vi får runde av der. Det ble nok en munter episode om den imponerende framdriften i amerikansk politikk. Vi høres igjen om en uke.